The Australian Defence Magazine podcast. Serving the business of defence. With Grant McHerron, Ewan Levick, Nigel Pittaway and Kira Davey.
Hi everyone and welcome back to the show. We've got the whole team together once again for yet another news review episode and in fact our final one for the year. And the big topic that we want to kick off with is of course the government's announcement of restructuring defence acquisition and rolling three separate groups into a whole new agency. So GWEO and NSSG, the National Shipbuilding and Sustainment Group, that was set up to be apart from CASG are now going to be rolled into the new unit along with CASG, so the new agency. So it's going to be really fascinating. Nigel, you put the story up. Do you want to lead off?
Yeah, thanks, Grant, and hello, everybody. It's an interesting week in defence, yet another interesting week in defence. This shouldn't come as a surprise in that there's been hints from both ministers along the way about the need to significantly overhaul the way defence acquisition is done. But nevertheless, it was a big announcement when it came earlier this week, and to see just how quickly that they want to move on this is also a bit of a surprise. An interim arrangement will be up and running by the 1st of July next year.
They're talking about having a group together to do the implementation plan so that the agency is up and running by mid-2027. And as you said, the interim, which I believe is under the Vice Chief of Defence Force. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. And it's going to be interesting, actually, the work that's done in that year between the Defence Delivery Group standing up on the 1st of July next year and the Defence Delivery Agency taking over on the 1st of July 2027. And I suspect that that's where the reform that we may or may not be aware of is coming into play here.
We may need to see some interesting renaming because we already have Defence Digital Group, so we've already got a DDG, so it'll be interesting to see what acronym they come up with for the delivery group.
Yeah, look, it is an interim agency, but it makes you wonder. I mean, as you explained in your intro there, the three groups are going to be combined into the new DDG. But how that transitions into the DDA in just a year is yet to be made public. And it's going to be interesting because there at the moment is obviously there are three heads of three different groups. And when it's all said and done and the dust has settled, we're going to have just one person in charge who will report directly to the Minister of Defence and the Minister for Defence Industry.
Yeah, that is an interesting structure. It does shift out. Currently, CASG is the same level as the various groups within defence. So the separate reporting line may help resolve some of the problems we have with accountability and responsibility and so on. Ewan, we've heard Nigel's views. What's your input on this?
Yeah, look, I think echoing some of what Nigel said, it's interesting what's been included in the new group. And then agency, so NSSG, GWEO, and CASG. But it's also interesting what's not been included. The Australian Submarine Agency has not been included, which raises some questions in my mind as to why. NSSG and GWEO, you know, oversee some pain points for the government. So the Hunter class ships have made headlines that the government hasn't liked, and GWEO has also made some headlines that the government doesn't like either. It's also interesting, I think, that you have a diarchy now at the top of the Defence Department between the Secretary and the CDF, and this will introduce effectively a triarchy. And I think this kind of gets to the point about, in commentary and other outlets, about whether this is a return to the DMO. And there's been a lot of back and forth on that. And the government's position is that the reform is stronger than the DMO. It will control the budget for acquisition projects. It will have a direct reporting line to the ministers. The DMO, by contrast, is a long time ago, but didn't control budget and didn't really upset the diarchy. If the diarchy is the problem, I mean, you've got to ask whether this will solve that problem. I also wonder who will lead it, what rank they'll be, how that will fit in. It seems in the short term, at least by this in the setup of the group, to be rearranging the deck chairs a little bit, moving the same people into different positions.
Ewan, following on from that, at the the doorstop after the announcement, Defence Minister Richard Marles was asked whether the new appointee is going to be titled the National Armaments Director. Now, it's not clear whether that's going to be a public servant or whether that's going to be a uniform. And Marles was asked whether that person, he or she, would be an Australian. And Marles responded that he'd hope so and that he would like to think that there was somebody with the calibre required in Australia to take that role. So it's not necessarily even going to be an Australian person in charge of this. We'll have to wait and see.
I'd also add as well, actually, the reform comes out of the government's frustration with the speed of delivery. You know, we all know about the iron triangle of cost against capability against speed. And if you increase capability requirements, you increase cost, you decrease speed. In the last few months, the messaging from the government has been that capability and cost, they feel they have a handle on, but they remain frustrated with speed to capability. One of the main reasons that that speed is not being achieved is changes to platforms that are coming from within the department. I think you can look at Hunter as a good example of that. Of the more change that happens, the more a project gets pushed back. That comes from Russell, but I think it's really now frustrating Pat Conroy and Richard Marles. And one of the reasons for this change is to try and remove the ability of the Defence Department to constantly seek the perfect solution at the expense of a solution that's good enough.
That was raised with C3000 at the start there. One of the reasons and the drivers behind having a zero-change vessel was to try and avoid these problems.
Kira, I know you're fairly new to the industry, but this is quite a massive reform. What's your view on how it will affect things?
Well, the hope is that it's more efficient and everything works smoother. But if you take 5 minutes of your time to look at anything that governments in throughout history have done, that's not always the case. So only time will tell. We'll see. Hopefully it makes things more efficient under one banner. But, you know, departments are collapsed, put together, taken apart. We've seen throughout history all before. So we'll see how it goes. But I think coming from the younger perspective and mostly coming as an outsider, slowly getting into the defence space and learning so much this year, it's very much like, yes, efficiency, if it works, if we have a faster process of getting our capability out there, that would be very good. And as I said, from a young person's perspective, efficiency makes more sense in this regard, but that remains to be seen.
That's a very astute point that you make. And it's interesting to note that the way they're actually going to, or the way the new organization is intended to run, actually takes a lot of that, as Ewan was mentioning a little bit earlier about bracket creep, if you like, out of the equation, whereas the capability will be, the capabilities identified within the IAP will go to the Vice Chief of Defence Force for consolidation, and then the Defence Delivery Agency will be handed the project with a budget. So then it's up to them to deliver that project within that budget.
Yeah, that was something I'd seen, was that the capability managers were going to be going into Vice Chief of Defence Force and staying there when the new agency is established. So that's going to be very interesting, because right now they're all through their respective groups, Air Force, Army, Navy, etc. So that'll be a big change.
I'd also make the observation as well that this model, by effectively stripping acquisition from the Department of Defense, brings Australia closer to a model a little bit more like South Korea's. So in South Korea, you have the Minister for National Defense, who has responsibility for the ROK Armed Forces, the Ministry of National Defense, and separately, the powerful Defense Acquisition Program Administration, which sits under the Minister for Defense and the Minister for Defense Acquisition in Korea, but is separate to the Defense Ministry, and that's to ensure transparency, efficiency, focus, budget, all that kind of stuff. Now, DARPA is quite powerful within the South Korean ecosystem. And now for us, we're having a National Armaments Director and a Defense Delivery Agency separate to the actual department. I wonder whether that's the road we're on.
The point about DARPA is that it has its own minister, which is a little bit more than what we're proposing. That's how important DARPA is in the Korean system. It has its own minister.
That's true.
On the note of the Korean acquisition, it might be a little off note, but don't they have, when a company submits for, say, like, or competes for a contract and they get chosen, doesn't their design go to DARPA and then
Correct.
Other companies can be, well, can get the rest of the contract or the other
models? Yeah, that's correct. So exactly as you said, IP is even if a particular company, say, one company designs a ship, the IP for the ship design goes to DARPA, who then hand the IP to competitors, and then they split the build programs. If you're building six ships, they might do one in one yard, one another, or they might do two in the first yard, two in the next one. And that's to sustain redundancy across the defense infrastructure in Korea and to ensure they have a thriving defense ecosystem.
It also stops one particular builder becoming super powerful with just that one thing. With two building it, you get competition as well.
So that's not a power that I think has been mentioned in the context of the Defense Delivery Agency or the group. And as I said, I think at the beginning, it'd be interesting to see whether the change will actually affect schedule across things like Hunter and Guiyo, which have been around for quite a long time now.
They may be too firmly set, but look, it does remind me of the 1930s, yet another echo back to the period of the 1930s, and our own Essington Lewis, who went around Australian industry and helped actually form Australia's defence industry just before getting ready for what became World War II. Is this new Director of Armaments position something similar to that?
So Essington Lewis was the Director General of the Department of Munitions, which was an Australian government department that existed until 1948, and it sat under the Minister for Munitions. So it's similar, unless someone wants to jump in and correct me.
Yeah, I think it's semantics. I think one was trying to mobilise local industry, and the other one just wants to deliver stuff on time.
Well, it's certainly an interesting development, and we're going to watch this quite carefully over the next few months and throughout 2026 as it develops. But speaking of 2026, the December-January issue, Nigel, that's getting ready to go to the printers.
Yes, thank you, Grant. Yes, and in fact, we signed off on the magazine this afternoon, so it's looking good. We hope you hope that it's going to be a good one. Of course, it's got our annual top 40 and top 20. Results in it, which I know many of our listeners are keen to read and find out who's who in the zoo as far as our primes and our SMEs are concerned. Another good result and some interesting conclusions, but I don't want to give too much away. You'll have to wait and read the magazine when it comes out.
And also coming out in the new year, we're going to have a whole new series of content coming out that we're producing with Ewan. Do you want to tell us quickly about it, Ewan?
Yeah, look, I don't want to give too much away. If you enjoy the ADM podcast, stay tuned. We'll be launching a new series early next year where we look at countries making headlines today and go back into the history behind it. So it's a geopolitical focus. Anyone with an interest in history and current geopolitics, I think hopefully will enjoy it. So stay tuned, early 2026 for the launch.
Watch this space. Well, speaking of the end of the year, Boeing was saying they're going to have Ghostbat potentially do a missile shot on an air-to-air target. But if they do get that out this year, they've already been beaten to the punch, apparently, by Turkey, who is claiming to have a collaborative combat aircraft shot down an airborne target.
Yeah, I would imagine that there's some interest in the Boeing camp at the moment. They certainly seem to have been gazumped by the Turks. And I won't, with apologies to our Turkish listeners, I'm not going to try and pronounce any of the names, but essentially a Turkish collaborative combat aircraft fired a radar-guided missile at a target drone and scored a hit. And although they were claiming that it's the very first time an uncrewed vehicle has successfully launched a missile against a target, it's actually a little bit more complicated than that. It's certainly the first time a radar-guided missile has been fired at a target. But for quite a few years, the US have been firing weapons from their Predator and Reaper drones. So technically speaking, yes, it's the first CCA to do it, and it's the first time a radar-guided missile has been employed. And, of course, that's what Boeing was intending to do with firing an AMRAAM, either, as you say, either late this year or early next year. So it's interesting times, isn't it? And I believe, and again, I haven't got the details to hand, but the Indonesian authorities, or certainly the Indonesian media, were reporting that 2 weeks ago an Indonesian extra-large autonomous underwater vehicle launched a torpedo for the first time. So we may not have the lead in these things that we think we do.
That's very interesting developments for sure, and quite the way to end December. This is the last news review we're doing for December. We've got a couple more episodes of other content to come out before the end of the year, including our final Indo-Pac collection. So we'll be coming back in mid to late January. And until then, we wish everyone a very prosperous break period over the Down Under summer. And we hope that everyone comes back refreshed and ready to go for the new year. So until then, on behalf of the entire ADM team, I'm Grant McCarran. Thanks for joining us. And of course, don't forget, if you enjoyed this episode, you can email us via defbag@yaffa.com.au with any questions, comments, or suggestions you may wish to give us about the show. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back in the not too distant future with another informative episode.
The ADM podcast is produced by Southern Skies Media on behalf of Australian Defence Magazine, a Yaffa media title. The views of the people appearing on this podcast do not necessarily represent the views of Australian Defence Magazine, the Department of Defence, or the guest's employer. If you wish to use any of the audio in this podcast, please contact Australian Defence Magazine via their website, australiandefence.com.au, or via email at defmag@yaffa.com.au.
You've been listening to a Yaffa Media podcast.
Southern Skies Media.